Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Abbey Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, Happy New Year to you. How are you doing, my friend?
Happy New Year to you too, Jim. I am happy that Penn State is in the semifinals. How are you?
Equally happy about the same thing, Steve. It's, you know what has struck me, though, is Penn State now has 15 games under their belt. And how different this is from other years, you know, when you typically have like a 12-game season, maybe a conference championship game. You wait a month, you play a bowl game, and there's your season. We've already had conference championship game, home playoff game, Fiesta Bowl against Boise State, and it's still not done. Think about how much bonus football we're getting.
I love it. I think it's great.
If you're a fan of college football, you have to love having so much more football. And the question this week I'm asking everyone, Steve, so I'm not singling you out when I ask this question. Has James Franklin won a big game yet now?
No.
Care to expound?
Yes. Not really. Yes. I mean, simply put, he's beaten all the teams that he's supposed to, teams that he had a talent advantage, teams that he's been favored to win. The two games he was expected to lose against Ohio State and Oregon, he lost. I think that's why there's going to be added attention on the semifinal game, because look, the last two games, Boise State and SMU in the playoffs, it's great that you beat them, but I mean, you beat a group of five team, and you beat a team that had been a group of five teams. So you did what you were supposed to do. I mean, you won convincingly. I'll give him that. And look, I get your point that you made several times about, you know, not a lot of teams and coaches being able to win all the teams that games that they're supposed to. So I will give Franklin some credit there. But if you look at we're in the 11th season now with him, his track record of beating teams of comparable talent, which I think as a good coach, you should probably win at least half of those, is abysmal. And it's even worse playing teams that have more talent. And I get, if a team has more talent than you, you're probably not going to win most of those. But good coaches find ways to do it more than Franklin has. And so I think that's why there's probably added fuel to the fire, so to speak, for this game with Notre Dame, is because in my opinion, that is a team of comparable talent. And Franklin goes on to beat them, plays in the championship. At that point, I will deem it a successful season. If Penn State loses, I know it's a 1.5 point, favored, Notre Dame's favored by 1.5. I'll be disappointed. And, you know, if you say, did Franklin win any big games this year? My answer will still be no.
That's not a unique take. It's not. They, as you said, I've pointed out before, just winning the games you're supposed to is kind of unique this season. As you look around at your Alabamas and Ole Misses and even Ohio State, their loss to Michigan, that certainly should not have happened. They were, you know, what, about a 3-touchdown favorite. So this year in particular, I think it is a success just to win every game that you're supposed to. You know, it gets you to a Final Four, which is not bad. Before we do move forward with Notre Dame, let's talk about Boise State a little bit. And going into the game, Penn State, again, was a solid favorite. Early on, looked like they were going to blow the doors off Boise State. That fumble kept them from going ahead 3 touchdowns, at which point I think it would have been game over. But what's your reaction to that game? What are your takeaways?
I look back and, like you, I think the failure to capitalize off that fumble by Penn State, fumbling it themselves on the ensuing handoff, to me was a missed opportunity. I think if they had gone up 3 scores, the game would have even gotten more out of hand. Defensively, I thought Tom Allen had the right scheme. You know, we talked about the need to shut down Ashton Jeanty and to focus on him, and almost at the expense of everything else, make that Boise State quarterback beat you, something he obviously couldn't do with the weapons there. A little concern heading into the game about the ability to tackle at the second level. And candidly, the defense overperformed my expectations. I thought they did a great job. They took away Jeanty, and really no complaints or critiques with them, which is a lot coming from me. Offensively, I thought the team started great. We talked about the importance of having a fast start. Again, not really finishing them off, I think, was something that opened the door to keep Boise State in the game a little longer than need be, because Aller came out hot. He had two great touchdown passes, and then after that, he didn't really perform as well. And I know that he was getting a lot of pressure up front. I don't know really why Penn State offensively wasn't as prepared for that, because that's something that Boise State had showed a lot on film, particularly blitzing up the middle. And with both Allen and Singleton, I believe they should be more familiar with that now, third year in the program. So I was a little disappointed there. Candidly, I thought this was the worst called game from Andy Kotelnicki since Ohio State. It was for the exact opposite reason. When they were playing Ohio State, the critique for me, probably others, against Kotelnicki was your offensive line wasn't going to get that push against that defensive front from Ohio State. So for you to sit there and just hand the ball off with a lack of creativity seemed stupid, in my opinion. Okay. And then it's the exact opposite here with Boise State. Offensively, the offensive line, because of that skill advantage we talked about with Boise State being a group of five team, they were making huge lanes, particularly for Katron Allen, who of the three running backs on the field between Genty, Singleton, and Allen, Allen was the best guy out there late that day. And knowing that you're getting 7 or 8 yards a clip, the fact that you try to do this cute stuff on third and short, I thought was stupid. Again, beating yourself, letting Boise State back in the game was the exact opposite of what was the problem in Ohio State. So I hope there's some lessons learned, because I think that defensive front from Notre Dame is going to resemble a lot more Ohio State than Boise State. With respect to Aller, you know, I think he gets a lot of NFL scouts excited because he makes some unbelievable throws. I think where his decision, I know there's been some mixed reporting now in the press about maybe he might not come back, but I think if he, assuming he does come back next year, which I still think is more likely, he has to show more consistency. And again, I think moving forward into the playoffs, is there's going to be more asked of Aller to carry this team, and that's going to require him to be more consistent, I think. So, you know, overall, I think Penn State should have won by more. They still had a commanding performance. That said, it's going to be a very different test on Thursday.
It's interesting in your analysis comparing it to how he called the Ohio State game. Now, I know there's a lot of people who all year long, they don't like any of the cute plays. Run the ball, run the ball. You got two great running backs. I'm the guy who typically says the opposite. You know, throw the ball And I'm not talking about throw it on third and long. I always talk about throwing it early, first down, when the defense is looking for you to run the ball. But Ohio State is the perfect example of that. However, this was the first game that I really jumped to the other side, and I not to hammer on one particular play call, but when it's third and one in the fourth quarter and you've got a two score lead, you know, you're playing with the clock as much as you are to score more points, hold on to the ball, get the first down, go from there. So yes, I was a little concerned about the play calling, and it is interesting that you brought up the Ohio State game, because yes, my critique was like yours, just the opposite.
Yeah, the other play that really jumped out at me, I think it was the first quarter. It was third and short, and they snap it to Tyler Warren. He pitches it to Aller to throw it back to Warren. I'm sitting there, just give it to Allen, okay? He'll get you the first down. I don't understand talking about risk-reward at that point. I don't get it. The other thing that I think was disappointing is the number of penalties. You know, I think Wormley got called for three, if I'm not mistaken, at least three that I remember. So that's something that you hope will be cleaned up. You don't know how the refs are going to call the game. Unfortunately, some call more penalties than others. Maybe I'll give you a different take here. I was actually okay with the penalty on denied Dennis Sutton, the unnecessary roughness on the interception. You know, as a former defensive player, when you intercept the ball, you're sort of taught or like, no, to let's go. Here's a free shot at the quarterback. Knowing that Genty was a star of the team, I'm okay with you sort of taking a free shot there to try to knock him out of the game. Again, others may not agree with that. That's fine. I'm just telling you, I was okay with that. I had no problem with it. But again, I know that others may not share that view.
Well, my issue with it wasn't in hitting Genty. It was when he hit him, which was well after. It was those are the penalties that are preventable that it does bother me. And I think if it happened, it's those kind of plays have been happening throughout the season. And now I'm going to start sounding like Steve Pavlik. Okay. This is what you would typically sound like in this kind of issue. I think it's a coaching issue, Steve. This is a coach who's lost control of his team. It's discipline, and it's on the coaches if it happens over and over again. Now, I'm saying that as if I'm making fun of you when I'm actually not, because I believe it. When it becomes a trend, you know, it's an emotional game, and things like this can happen. But it feels like it's happening more often this season with this team than in other years. And so I point at the coaches for that.
Well, I like the way you sound, and I think that's probably a fair critique. But on that particular play, again, as someone who played defense, remember, you're taught all week, I'm sure they've been hearing constantly about Genty, and it's sort of like, okay, the guy's on the field, now I got a free shot to take at him because, you know, at that point he becomes a tackler, I can block him. Again, that might have been one penalty where I'd have been like, you know what, that's fine.
Spoken like a true defensive player. So your assumption is all week long they've been talking, play through the whistle, play through the echo of the whistle, right?
Well, that and Genty's their whole team. You have to shut him down. And to the defense's credit, they did that. That was the only thing that you were worried about. I think what's going to be, sort of concerning moving forward is both with Boise State, even maybe more so than SMU, but the last two playoff games, Penn State has had such a superior talent advantage, particularly in the offense and defensive lines. And I think that's not going to be the case with Notre Dame. And so the encouraging thing is that they played and were as dominant up front as they should have been. They're going to face much higher, stiffer tasks this week, you know, with Notre Dame on both ends of the ball, which I'm waiting to see. I don't know that the Notre Dame running backs, the situation is going to be necessarily better than Boise State. But I think that was important that they improved tackling at the second level.
All right, that's the last word for quarter number one. Stick around, we got lots more to go. Are you interested in traveling to Miami for the college football national semifinal game with your Nittany Lions? Then I have the answer for you from our friends at Collegiate Athletic Travel. They are offering a 3-night air package. It includes round trip, nonstop, charter air transportation from either State College or Harrisburg. Yep, you heard me right. Nonstop out-of-state college or Harrisburg. It also includes hotel accommodations for 3 nights and your game ticket. And as always, when you deal with Collegiate Athletic Travel, you will have your travel directors who will provide you with all the help you need to make sure it's a great trip. Check them out at athletictravel.com or you could give them a call for more information at 814-238-4987.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Steve Pavlik. It's quarter number two. And I've been told long ago in this forum, radio, podcasting, it's really your listeners get to know you very well, Steve, okay? Because this is your personality on display. This is who you really are, whether you're on the air, off the air. So people get to know you, know what you're all about. However, in between segments, you gave another little revelation into who you really are, okay? So I'm going to make you repeat this for our listeners. What did you tell me about your playing days and the kind of play that Danai Dennis-Sutton made against Genty?
I said I got, I made several of those plays back when I played, may have drawn a few penalties myself. But that said, I will point out my teammates elected me captain. I'm not saying there's a direct correlation there. But I'm not saying there's not. So.
I would suspect there is. That's that. Steve's the gamer. In fact, he's such a gamer. He's still playing after the play ends. So that, folks, that's just a little peek inside the real Steve. And by the way, there's tone also when you make a comment like that. Steve said that with a lot of pride also.
I don't think the listeners care about my high school football days, but I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I think they like aggressive play from their football team. All right, well, let's keep going. Let's talk a little bit about the playoffs in general. I started the show, Steve, by talking about we've gotten 15 games, which is just fantastic if you're a college football fan. And what I've been a little bit surprised by, maybe I shouldn't be, is some of the national media take and narrative on some of this. You and I have talked quite a bit about Paul Feinbaum, the entire ESPN team being so skewed towards the Southeast Conference. I don't know if you saw this, but I'm seeing now some of the conclusions about, you know what, the top four teams who got byes, they all lost. So automatically, since B follows A, it was caused by A. The reason why they all lost is because they had a bye and sat for several weeks and were still rusty. Before I go into salty Jim, why do you respond to that? Why do you take that one before I go on too much of a rant?
Well, I think we mentioned maybe before that, you know, the issues necessarily weren't with the teams that were selected, the bids. It was with the teams that got the byes. I don't know that correlation is causation here. I think with the byes, it's easy to draw a lazy narrative. I think a lot of people who work at ESPN are pretty lazy in the thought process or lack thereof. So it doesn't surprise me that's where most of it's coming from. But you know, I think Arizona State, they exceeded expectations. I know they started a little slow, but, you know, they had a bye. They benefited from that. I think Georgia, I know they didn't play well against Notre Dame, but they had needed that bye to break in that quarterback. I think they probably benefited from that bye more than anyone else. So it's difficult to, you know, point to as sort of a counterfactual, but I don't know that the being off for that length of time necessarily was a detriment to this team. Maybe moving forward, if we talk about maybe the playoff format, we'll reevaluate how it's structured. They'll do away with the byes. And that may be one conclusion. The other thing too is the teams, two of them particularly, between Arizona State, I know that actually ended up being the best game, but Boise State in particular, I mean, they were picked to be blown out, double-digit underdog. Essentially, that's what happened. So, you know, I don't know that really had any impact in the game. So I just think that's kind of lazy. You know, that said, the other thing to watch, too, is just the pathway. I mean, Oregon played, at this point, Ohio State, who's playing, objectively, the best football of anybody right now. At this point, it's tough to think the only team that can beat Ohio State is probably Ohio State themselves, if they start screwing up and beating up and making turnovers and dumb mistakes. So, you know, I don't know that you can blame that loss necessarily for Oregon on the pathway. I do think there's some, I'm trying to be objective here, reason to question these pathways and how they were laid out for Oregon having beat Penn State in the Big Ten championship to have to play Ohio State so early on. Not sure that necessarily, you know, is a reward for the team there and what their pathway looked like. But those are sort of my thoughts.
Well, I've talked about this before. When they designed this, there was still a Pac-12 where Oregon would have still been there. There was still a Big 12 where Texas was playing there. And the expectation was a Big 10 Southeast Conference and then the two best of ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12 would get those byes. So I think they will fix it. What's interesting, though, Steve, is there's like this temporary two-year contract that they piece together. And next year is – it's the following year, the 26th season, that they could make major changes more easily. They're still working that out. But – for them to make the change for next year in how they do those buys, they need a unanimous vote, which means Big 12, ACC, the Group of Five, the Mountain West Conference has to vote yes to change it. Yeah, you're shaking your head. I'm with you. Ain't going to happen because those teams, it's in their best interest to keep it.
Absolutely. It is in their interest to keep it. You know, I think the other thing I'd point out, too, is I think after the first round, there's a lot of you mentioned Paul Feinbaum, you know, criticism of some of the selection of certain teams making it in. And, you know, there was, why didn't Alabama make it? Alabama went on to lose to Michigan. You know, why didn't South Carolina potentially make it? I mean, they went on to lose to Illinois. So, you know, I think some of these teams like Indiana and SMU are probably looking a little better now in terms of what the committee actually selected. The other thing, too, to point out, you know, Ohio State sort of threw a wrench in all this by losing to Michigan. You know, they did have two losses. So that's why they were sort of ranked a little lower, which may, you know, explain why they, because of their record, Oregon had to face them. I know that's something that people tend to fixate on, but I just want to take another shot there at the SEC.
Well, any opportunity, go for it. And I know I don't think we've spoken since that Alabama lost to Michigan and South Carolina lost to Illinois. And what I think is happening, though, Steve, with it is those ESPN's take has been so egregious, so bad, that people are beginning to realize that that's what's going on. And the example I gave a few days ago was Nick Saban. They were asking him about Alabama's loss. And, of course, he's going to have a bias towards Alabama and the Southeast Conference. He was actually, you know, pretty gracious in his comment, but then he had to add in, well, you know, whenever a team just barely misses the playoffs, like Alabama did, there's going to be a natural letdown when you go to a bowl game. Now, I actually believe that there's some reality to his point. However, coming from him, former Alabama coach, Southeast Conference guy, ESPN guy, in my mind, he lost total credibility. So when he says something like that, you know what? I just dismiss it. Yeah, that's what that group has done as far as my opinion of their opinion.
They're not credible because they're not unbiased. And now it's sort of come out, this whole, oh, SEC is a dominant conference. Well, not when you actually play against other teams. And I think that's just sort of revealing to everybody now how just biased and misaligned the incentives are there for ESPN and the SEC moving forward. I'd also point out Michigan played that game and beat them without most of their better players. I don't believe Alabama had anybody set out. And when Nick Saban was coaching Alabama, that did happen to him a few times. And I don't recall his team playing it as poorly. I'm not saying Nick Saban's necessarily the greatest coach, although there's a case to be made.
He might be.
But I'm pointing out that, you know, when he was coaching, I doubt he would have excused some sort of letdown from his team. I also want to point out, too, maybe people may not have seen it as much. One of the things that stuck out to me when Illinois beat South Carolina was people may have seen the clip where the South Carolina coach Shane Beamer runs across the field. I point out that he did that noticeably after Brett Bielema was on the other side of the field. When Brett Bielema taunted him, Beamer was nowhere to be found when he actually could have been in a position to do something. He waited to make a scene after Brett Bielema was already on the other side, and he knew that Brett Bielema wasn't going to destroy him, given that Bielema's several inches and several pounds bigger than him. So I just want to point that out if people didn't notice that. But.
Well, my take on it is I've never been a Brett Bielema guy, but in this game against the Southeast Conference team, you go, Brett, take it to them. So I was happy with that. I want to go back to this Arizona-Texas game, which, by the way, was such a tremendous game. I just give so much credit to Arizona State. After it looked like they were blown out, they stuck with it. They played hard, physical, did all the things to come back. But so much hinged on that non-targeting call. Just wanted to get your take as an admitted cheap shot artist yourself, Steve. Okay, which you have talked about. I'd be curious to see your take on that call.
I'm not a fan of the targeting call in general. So you're never going to hear me actually say that they should call targeting. I'll just leave it at that. The only thing I will say, and I think that I have some sympathy with the coach there, is it's not called consistently, whatever it is. That has to be frustrating. And my sense is that when the officials gathered, they didn't want to decide the game based on some ambiguous call. I don't know that for certain, but that wouldn't surprise me if that's how it was decided. But hats off to Arizona State. Scataboo, I hadn't really seen that guy play before, that running back for them, but I'll tell you what, he really impressed me. I don't know what the guy's going to run in the 40-yard dash at the combine, but you can't teach somebody to run over people like that and play with that kind of heart. So I hope somebody picks him up in the NFL.
I hope so too. And I want to know if it was in that game or the prior week during the conference championship game, I heard someone talking about his speed and said that he's actually much faster than his build would lead you to believe. And if that's the case, I mean, he felt like their version of Tyler Warren, you know, the guy who could do so many things and is probably a much better athlete than you would assume on first blush. All right, Steve, that is it for quarter number two. We got lots more left in the show. Stick with us. Are you interested in traveling to Miami for the college football national semifinal game with your Nittany Lions? Then I have the answer for you from our friends at Collegiate Athletic Travel. They are offering a 3-night air package. It includes round trip, nonstop, charter air transportation from either State College or Harrisburg. Yep, you heard me right. Nonstop out-of-state college or Harrisburg. It also includes hotel accommodations for 3 nights and your game ticket. And as always, when you deal with Collegiate Athletic Travel, you will have your travel directors who will provide you with all the help you need to make sure it's a great trip. Check them out at athletictravel.com or you could give them a call for more information at 814-238-4987.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. All right, Steve, enough of what happened in the past. Let's start looking forward to Notre Dame. Before we get into the specifics of the game itself, it's interesting, and I think you and I brought this up before, the two Catholic boys, I don't know how much it is down your way, but here in Pennsylvania, after Penn State, Notre Dame is probably the next most. There are so many, if they're Irish, if they're Catholic, and it may not be as much now as it was when I was growing up years ago, but there is still a huge, huge number of Notre Dame folks around here.
Oh, as somebody who grew up in the Catholic high school scene, I went to a Catholic college himself. I'm amazed at the level of lazy people that just decide to root for Notre Dame for no other reason to be like, oh, I'm Catholic. I mean, I enjoyed wearing my Penn State paraphernalia to Catholic Mass recently, just to remind people where I stand here in Maryland. And I'm really looking forward to wearing it next week after Penn State beats them, to see if I get any dirty looks at the communion line. So,
well, Steve, you're wearing your athletic apparel, your allegiance to Penn State, to church.
No, what they're nice.
They're wearing a suit and tie. Come on, it's church.
I have Penn State ties. I have Penn State polo shirts. I have Penn State button-down shirts. I have Penn State vests, pullovers from very nice golf ones. So don't think that I'm just showing up there in like shorts and a t-shirt. I should have clarified that.
But. Well, just in recognition though of what we're up against, I attended a funeral just on Friday this past week, and people who know what I do I had more than one person who's a Notre Dame fan pull me aside at a funeral to let me know about their allegiance to Notre Dame. So, yes, we've got that. It happens, but we shall survive it, Steve. We talked earlier, I asked you the question about has James Franklin won a big game yet? And you pointed towards this game. And just how big a game is this? Not just obviously Penn State wins this game, or whoever wins this game goes to the college football championship game, but just for the program itself, all of Penn State program, what does a win in a game like this mean for them?
Well, it's huge. I mean, first of all, there's a really rich tradition between Penn State and Notre Dame. I was at the 2007 game when Penn State and Notre Dame last played. Penn State beat them. I believe it was the first stadium-wide whiteout, and that was a lot of fun to be there. But I think the team under Franklin, you're lacking that signature win. You know, we talked earlier segment about the national media narrative and it being off. Well, look, in this case, they have something to this with respect to Franklin doesn't have the best record against teams of comparable talent. And this is because you just look on the betting line here, I think a team of comparable talent. It's more or less a coin flip game. And based on that, you know, Franklin needs to start producing here, because at this point, his record in these types of things is just not very good. So I think that's sort of, you know, the thing that Franklin in particular wants to convey, you know, on the recruiting trail to donors for NIL and the likes is, you know, hey, I'm making progress here. And this is, I think, why there's probably more at stake for him than Marcus Freeman over there at Notre Dame.
And you know what, Steve, I'm in agreement with you that this means so much. And I believe Ohio State's going to beat Texas, okay? And if they keep playing the way they've been, I think they could beat Texas rather handily. And if it were to be a Penn State-Ohio State national championship game, you know what? Ohio State's going to be favored, and they're playing at a level. I'm not sure Penn State would be able to win that game, all right? Look, I'll let you respond to that in a second, but I bring that up. I'm not saying it's impossible or any of that. So, but I feel like Notre Dame, Ohio State at their best, I think is a much more talented team than Penn State. I actually do. Penn State, Notre Dame is not a more talented team than Penn State. I think this is a comparable talent game. So this is. It wouldn't be losing to a team with inferior talent, but it wouldn't be beating a team with better talent either. I think these are two very, very comparable teams.
Just quickly on the Ohio State thing, I agree with you. I would just say of these three non-Ohio State teams, between Texas, Notre Dame, and Penn State, and I'm biased, I'm on a Penn State show, but Penn State would give Ohio State the best game. And I have family, and I have some friends who went to Ohio State. I'm not really proud of that, but I'll admit it. And if you talk to them, they will tell you that the team they don't want to play is Penn State. And that's because Penn State has an offense. Okay. And I think we talked about the comparable talent. What scares me about the Notre Dame matchup, if I'm being candid, is yes, they have comparable talent, but there's a very different style of play. And it brings me back to last year when Penn State played Michigan at home. And Michigan had the advantage of having just a better, more physical offense and defensive line and just controlling it that way. And when I've seen Notre Dame play, there's not much on that offense that scares you. You know, I don't really think the receivers are that good. I don't think that quarterback in particular, anything special. I think he's elusive enough at times, but their star running back, I don't believe is 100% if he's even going to play, but they have a dominant offensive line. And I just fear that their offensive line, and Notre Dame, I expect they're going to do this, to just come out and try to be very physical and just run the ball at that Penn State defensive line. And if there's one knock against Franklin's team, the type of teams he's recruited, he puts a great emphasis on speed, and that can help. And you talk about where guys like Abdul Carter, Deni Dennis Hunt can really make a difference. It's rushing the passer. That speed doesn't help you when somebody's just running the ball right down your throat. And if you try to run around him, a halfway decent coach running back is going to cut the other way and pick up a big chunk. And that's what you saw Michigan do last year at Penn State. And my fear is that Notre Dame's going to do that again to Penn State's defensive line. Now, I hope they'll step up. I hope they'll man up. But, you know, when I think about Notre Dame's running game, it's probably the exact opposite of Boise State. Both teams wanted to run the ball. Boise State had a talented running back and an underwhelming offensive line. It's the exact opposite here with Notre Dame. So that scares me. Then on the other side of the ball, defensively, Notre Dame has a pretty good front. They have a good defense. They're not going to give up a lot. My guess is they're going to try to take away the run. That's what I would do with if I were them. Penn State's receivers, talked about it all year, probably average at best. And how is Drew Aller going to beat that defense? If I'm the Notre Dame defensive coordinator, I'm going to take away the run and make Drew Aller beat me. And he's going to have to be consistent in order to do that. So that's sort of how I see this playing out.
Interesting point. In talking about Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame has a real identity. They know who they are, and they know how they will win games. And it's a great comparison comparing them to Michigan a year ago. Michigan knew who they were. And, you know, when they run the ball 17 times in a row against Penn State and do it effectively. Now, what I liked, also, I understand your point, Boise State was a different. They don't have the offensive line Notre Dame does. They don't have the studs up front, but they had the great running back. What I liked in the Boise State game was there was no doubt what Penn State's strategy was. I mean, they gave up 300-yard passing to a very average quarterback, and it was okay because they said, we are going to stop the running game here, and it was gang tackling. They flocked to the ball. It wasn't just one guy, it was always multiple guys. And whenever Gente was able to bounce off one defender, there were three more waiting for him. So I thought that was very impressive by Penn State's defense. Flip it around, though, the point on offense is, yeah, I think Drew Aller has more talent throwing the ball than the Notre Dame quarterback. The question is, how will Andy Kotelnicki call the play to take advantage of that? And the last point being, Boise State found the formula to blitz Drew Aller, put him on his heels, literally and physically. And it affects Drew Aller when he's under pressure. And the next play, when he may not be under as much pressure, he's still looking for the pressure, it appears. So that what will Andy Kotelnicki scheme up, both for the offensive line to pick up the blitzes, and maybe it's just get the ball out quicker?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is Notre Dame is a pretty blitz-happy defense. I think the thing that was one thing Aller does well, I think, is when the pressure comes from the outside. I think he's sort of taught well enough to sort of step around and move within the pocket. The problem was Boise State was bringing the blitz right up the middle. I mean, Peyton Manning will tell you that's the last thing he wants when he was playing or wanted when he was playing is when the blitz comes right at you as opposed to the side. It's very difficult to step up. And what I don't understand is, you know, there's ways to defend that. You should have receivers breaking shorter, quicker routes right across the middle because you got to throw instinctively where the blitz is coming from. So hopefully Kotelnicki has learned from that, because I'm assuming that these defensive coaches from Notre Dame are going to see what Boise State did well and try to emulate that. The only thing, though, is I think Boise State had to bring a lot more people. Notre Dame has a pretty good defensive front, so if they can get pressure with four or maybe just blitzing one guy, that's going to be something to watch.
Yeah, I agree with that. And by the way, because I always have a couple listeners who will respond to every mistake I made, Steve, I meant literally and figuratively. So I made that mistake. I've now corrected it. No need. And you know who you are. Okay. I get grammar and pronunciation, emails and text messages. So I figured I would just get that out there. Steve, we're running out of time for this segment. We've got one more to go. But when I come back, what I want to talk to you about is Abdul Carter came out of the game against Boise State. The defense still played very well. Amin Vanover played very well in his place. However, to just assume that you're going to play just as well with Abdul Carter than without him, no. When we come back, I want to get your take on just how important is it for Abdul Carter to be out there for this game. Me personally, I think it's pretty important, Steve. I think so. We'll get your take when we come back after this break.
Are you interested in traveling to Miami for the college football national semifinal game with your Nittany Lions? Then I have the answer for you from our friends at Collegiate Athletic Travel. They are offering a three-night air package. It includes round trip, nonstop, charter air transportation from either State College or Harrisburg. Yep, you heard me right. Nonstop, out-of-state college or Harrisburg. It also includes hotel accommodations for three nights and your game ticket. And as always, when you deal with Collegiate Athletic Travel, you will have your travel directors who will provide you with all the help you need to make sure it's a great trip. Check them out at athletictravel.com, or you could give them a call for more information at 814-238-4987.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve. Jim, when we finished up quarter three, I was talking about Abdul Carter, Steve, and what effect it would have if he's not on the field. What's your take?
Well, I think the first thing is, assuming he can play, what percentage of Carter are we going to get? Is it Carter at 75%, 90%? Is he able to effectively use, I guess, that arm, limb area, whatever, shoulder seems to be bothering him? That's going to go a long way, in my opinion. The other thing, and I guess maybe where I'm different from you, is, you know, I agree that Carter's very special in terms of somebody that can run, rush the passer. I don't think Notre Dame's passing the ball. I don't think that Carter's an asset. I think he's a liability in the run game. So having Vandover there, if you're trying to stop Notre Dame from running the ball, might not be the worst thing out there. So maybe they do some sort of combination where Vandover's playing more against the run. If you have Carter at 90%, he's coming in there. If you're able to force Notre Dame to pass. So I guess that's sort of how I'm thinking about it. I mean, just seeing Carter when they played Illinois, Minnesota, his skill set at the next level translate to rushing the passer. He has been very average, in my opinion, at defending the run. And given what Notre Dame's going to do, I guess that's sort of how I see it. Now, what you could say, if the game plays out this way, which I hope it does, is Penn State can get up early a few scores, similar to Boise State. Ideally get that third score and force Riley Leonard, the Notre Dame quarterback, to beat you, because I don't think he can. I think that is a situation where, okay, now if you have Carter coming at the edge because, you know, Riley Leonard has to run the ball and Carter can chase him down, then that's a different story. But, you know, if it is going to play out more of a closely back and forth game with Notre Dame running the ball, I don't think Carter brings that much to the table.
That's an interesting take, and probably a lot of truth to that. Although I think he's improved as the season has gone on, but there's no doubt. Yes, what makes him special is in rushing the quarterback. And yeah, we might see a third and long, here he comes into the game type of deal. It was interesting. I don't know if you saw Franklin's press conference, and you know, I always have to bring this up. When James Franklin starts to talk about injuries, I just cringe. Okay. I think he's actually pretty good in most of his press conferences, Steve, but when he talks injuries, I go crazy.
I think this is one instance, and you know, I'm not the biggest Franklin fan, but I will give Franklin credit for how he handles this situation. I would not let anybody know what Carter's going to do, whether he's going to play or not play. And if he does, what percentage is going to be? Let Notre Dame figure that out. They have two fewer days to prepare for this anyway. And a guy like Carter is something that you have to scheme around, whether or not he's going to be there, particularly if you're trying to figure out, is he 100%, is he 70% if he does play? So I think this is an instance where the way Franklin dances around this stuff is actually to his advantage. I give him some credit for sticking to it.
Well, this is like when there was some question of Aller playing after he injured his knee against Wisconsin, and or was it Minnesota? Wisconsin,
it was, yeah, Wisconsin because before Ohio
it was
State,
Wisconsin,
right?
Because Bo Pribula played in that game. it's those are the games when it's, yes, be coy. You know, I'm not going to give any help to the opposition. Fine, I'm okay with that. But even like in this one, like I'm cherry picking a quote from him. Okay, Steve, here, the one quote he says, I don't think there is anything stopping him from playing. If you just take that one sentence, it seems like he's going to play. But you get everything else that was said and you had to hear it. There was like a paragraph or two from James Franklin, which makes you less likely to believe he's going to play, or at least not be sure if he's going to be on the field or not.
But again, just saying he's going to play, I mean, how much is he going to play? Is it going to be a limited snap count? Is he playing at 85%? Are we talking about just third down and long situational? I mean, I think this ambiguity works to Penn State's advantage. And as critical as I've been of Franklin for a variety of reasons, this is one area where I'll actually give him some credit.
All right, let's get back to the game itself. And what if you're the coordinators, you're creating your game plan this week, put you in Tom Allen's shoes. Let's start there. And then after you answer that, I'll ask you the same question about Kotelniki.
Well, I'm Tom Allen. I think you play with eight guys in the box. I think whether that's a fifth defensive lineman down there, bring an extra linebacker down there, you should be able to build off some of the success you had stopping the running attack from Boise State here, recognizing that the challenge is going to be more, I guess, difficult offensive line. So maybe it's more run blitzing. I would make that quarterback from Notre Dame beat you. The predicament that you might find yourself in there is if you blitz and you don't get home, Leonard is elusive enough, and he's made a lot of teams beat that. You saw that with Georgia. Notre Dame, despite my not liking them for a variety of reasons, they're well coached. I'll give them that. They don't beat themselves, and I think that's what you really saw in that Georgia game. Was Georgia turned the ball over on the 10-yard line, gave Notre Dame a touchdown. Notre Dame runs the kickoff back. Notre Dame's offense was abysmal, but they found a way to win. So you can't beat yourself. So that's sort of the thing is, I would focus on eight guys in the box, take away the run, make Notre Dame beat you throwing, because I don't think they can, and get run blitz to sort of, if you don't think your guys can match up and defeat the blocks, and that's what you have to do. Offensively, I think it would be play action, because I assume Notre Dame's going to focus a lot on trying to take away the run. I think Notre Dame's nose guard's out, if I'm not mistaken, one of the defensive tackles up there in the middle. So perhaps you sort of test that early on to see who's effective. I think Catron Allen has been one of the unsung heroes in the playoff game so far. I mean, sometimes, you know, these games, one guy's hot, one guy's not. Allen's really been stepping up, in my opinion. So, you know, I don't know, this really makes a difference if you're going to split the reps, but if you find one guy's working, I'd stick with him a little longer. And then play action to Tyler Warren. You know, I don't know how Notre Dame's going to match up against him. He's your best wide receiving threat. And if you're having some success, you know, take some shots early. One of the things that I liked about the Boise State game was the fact that Mari Evans, I think it was the second touchdown. It's a great throw by Allard there. But I think that was a good sign of moving forward. You know, the fact that he was able to make a big play like that and at least put that on film. So, you know, I think sticking with what works, it may be going back to some more creativity on short yardage, because I think you're going to have a difficult time running against that Notre Dame front. So I guess that's how I would approach it.
Well, I like that you brought up Omari Evans and taking a shot. I think sometimes when you do that, even if you don't get a completion out of that, make the defense at least aware that you are capable of doing that, that you will do that. I think you change how the defense plays against you. It's a little harder correlation to show that, but I think it does open up the rest of the offense when you show that you're able to do that. And I think that if you're Notre Dame and you see this Penn State team, you've got to say, stop the run first. That's where our emphasis is going to be. And I know Penn State's been so successful running the ball, and I'm not telling them not to, but I want to see, you mentioned play action pass. I want to make Notre Dame's defenders, linebackers especially, have to hesitate, show that you are willing to throw the ball first down, second down, that you are not just automatically going to run the ball every first down, because I'm not sure that Penn State's going to have the same success doing it, running the ball against Notre Dame as they did against Boise State and SMU and even against Oregon.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, this is going to be a formidable defensive front, and we're going to learn a lot about Kotelniki because I think this will be a good test. As somebody who can, in my opinion, make critical adaptions during the game, see what's working, what doesn't, and, you know, again, make those in-game adjustments. I think that's what really separates the elite coaches from just the average guys.
I think that's going to be important strategically. I think the coordinators will be really important in this type of game where, again, as we talked about earlier, I don't think this is a game where either team has a great talent advantage. It's a pretty level playing field here, Steve.
It is, but that's where I just go back to my concern is it's a stylistic difference. And when I think about how Penn State matched up against Michigan last year, to me, as you mentioned, this Notre Dame identity is very similar to the identity that Michigan had last year. I don't know, and we won't know until Thursday, whether or not Penn State has learned lessons and sort of increased their physicality to go toe-to-toe for that. But I think that's sort of the thing that in the back of my mind where I'm like, why is Notre Dame favored? Well, against a lot of these physical matchups, Penn State hasn't really performed that well. And so that's sort of my fear.
All right, Steve. We've got a minute or two left. Going to give you the chance. How is this game going to play out? Give me a prediction. And if you want, throw in your bold prediction for the game.
Think 28-20 Penn State. Think Aller throws three touchdowns. And I think Notre Dame makes an unforced error with a Leonard interception.
Wow. Very, very specific with that. 28-20. And perhaps the more important question, if they win this game, will you concede? Will you concede James Franklin's a good coach?
No, because you can't just say because you beat one team of comparable talent that you're a good coach. I'd like to see him do it a little more than once. But I will concede that at that point it will have been a successful season. And look, if you're going to play Ohio State, I think of the three teams remaining, Penn State would give them the best game. And you only have to be better than them once. I recall a 1986 national championship team where, look, objectively, Miami was the better team on paper, but they beat themselves. So anything can happen. You just got to get to the position you have to be in a position where, you know, you have that opportunity.
Well, it's interesting you say that. And this kind of matches up with, I've talked about this in basketball quite a bit, where if there's a super team, but a team has played them within the conference twice regular season, maybe a conference tournament, and they play them in the NCAA tournament, that familiarity is to your advantage. And I think that is the advantage that Penn State would have against Ohio State. Hopefully, Steve, we'll get a chance to talk about that next week. But first, you know, we have Penn State and Notre Dame to worry about first. It would be nice to see Penn State win this one. Then we could talk about that next week. Thank you, Steve. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Are you interested in traveling to Miami for the college football national semifinal game with your Nittany Lions? Then I have the answer for you from our friends at Collegiate Athletic Travel. They are offering a 3-night air package. It includes round trip, nonstop, charter air transportation from either State College or Harrisburg. Yep, you heard me right. Nonstop, out-of-state college or Harrisburg. It also includes hotel accommodations for 3 nights and your game ticket. And as always, when you deal with Collegiate Athletic Travel, you will have your travel directors who will provide you with all the help you need to make sure it's a great trip. Check them out at athletictravel.com, or you could give them a call for more information at 814-238-4987.